It's time for Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, the greatest automotive podcast in the known world with Ron Foreman, Brady Wright, and Steve Johann. Let's find out what's going on this week. Okay, here we are, the very first show of 2021. I can't believe I am saying that. Do you realize that this is the 169th Horsepower Chrome
Wow.
169. I can't believe that we haven't messed this up way before now, but here we are. As you know, if you listen at all, we're on iTunes, we're on iHeartRadio, Spotify, of course, Podomatic.com is our home site. And we're adding a lot of places that we're growing some of the new social media places. We are on MeWe now, and we're also on Parler, and I'm working on getting us on Rumble. So we'll see, but stick with us. We do thank you for liking and following our Facebook page and the show page. And Steve is doing a great job of getting the videos up now. So make sure that you check those and like and follow the pages and all that kind of stuff, because it makes us feel good that somebody's out there listening.
Yes.
Right now, as usual, our first segment is Back to the Blacktop. This is where Steve collects all the cool stuff he's found out about the automotive industry, and boy, this show is going to be all about that. But he's got some lead-in stories now. Steve, what do you got?
Well, as a lead-in story, we're also just added to BitChute, so we have one show up on BitChute, and that is another video outlet, so that is an exciting thing.
How does that spell, BitChute?
BitChute.
Okay,
so BitChute.com, and the nice thing is anybody who gets deplatformed from YouTube goes to BitChute and gets on there. Not that we're deplatformed, but it's another video outlet, and
nice.
I will start loading up everything on there, mirroring everything
this
over
is
there.
Why Steve is the producer.
Yeah.
Because he knows this stuff, and I wait on it.
Well, you're doing Parler, and I don't know that stuff, so you're the social media guy, and I'm the digital guy. So
I'm doing TikTok.
Yeah, well, there you go. We need TikTok. That's where my son is. So we're starting the new year with more than the same reflected in the more virtual events coming up. And the largest of them will be the General Motors CEO Mary Barrera delivering a keynote at the upcoming All Virtual Consumer Electronics Show next month.
Yep.
And
CES is a huge event.
It's probably one of the top 10 of all mammoth events. And it goes on in Vegas, and it's interesting because the bad news is all the prostitutes down there will not be busy during that time, because for those who do not know, it is one of the high times of the year.
Prostitution in Las Vegas, you know that, right?
What's that?
There is no legal prostitution in Las Vegas.
It doesn't matter. It happens to be very, very big with the consumer electronics.
Well, especially because the same weekend of the show is the Adult Video Network.
Yes, that's right.
Show. That's why.
And they do it together because they know all the geeks like to do the porn.
You guys know way too much about all this prostitution.
It's in the same hotel, usually. So.
Yeah, it is what it is. So, speaking of this...
Don't ask me how I know.
Yeah. Having been in a trade show that was promotional products industry at the first of the year, it was like the first of the year trade shows that was at the Mandalay, and then everything came after. You start learning which ones were the biggest ones, and we were always in the top 25 and two floors. And we really enjoyed that. That was many years ago. But anyhow, well, crimes involving vehicles have been on the decline in recent years, except for perhaps the most dangerous of them all, which is carjacking. It is on the rise. According to a new report, and many are pointing a finger at the mandating mask wearing by various governing bodies in response to the COVID bug as one of the reasons. So let's just say that you're wearing a mask, and forever and ever, wearing a mask was kind of synonymous with breaking in, robbing people and everything. Now with the stupid mandates, it's anybody's walking around there, perverts and everything. And the fact is now people can go up to your car and they look around, boom, they take the car and off. And no one suspects them one way or another. So it is a huge reason.
You can walk into a bank with a mask.
I know.
And ask the teller for
money.
You just automatically get arrested for doing stuff like that.
I know.
You want to make sure that you lock your car doors when you're getting fuel at a gas station too, because if you're getting fuel and you're paying attention to try and put fuel in the car and your doors are unlocked, they can come around behind you and open your car door and get your cell phone, your laptop, whatever.
Yeah.
So it's not just your
no, car. No, no,
and you have in it as well.
We've had two break-ins at our apartment.
All the videos, you know, all the videos are looking at people, and they have masks on. They can't tell who they are.
Can't tell. Yeah. And at my office complex, they had a bank of mailboxes, and they all got busted open. And so now they put in a new set on the other side, much more stronger duty, heavy duty. And then I just got an email today that says, if you put your check in the outside deposit box, that got busted into over the weekend.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, well, what do you think's going to keep going on while this government? So you know that. Anyway, so thank God we live in a Second Amendment country, and protect yourself. Up next is battery operated cars prediction. So now listen to this closely, and now this is what I've been finding out. There was a very slow news week, but the biggest thing that they were talking about was electric vehicles. And up is the latest report from Automotive News predicts sales of pure battery powered vehicles will surpass diesels in the next several years. But now listen to this. While diesels keep losing momentum in the passenger car segment, they continue to find strong demand in the pickup segment, but aren't expected to reach much larger than 4% of the market share in the coming decade. So now, this translates, get this, the EVs will not surpass 4% of the automotive market, because that's what they're really saying. And then the ABI research put out by J.D. Powers points out that the majority of Americans still do not want electric vehicles because of all the issues, high prices, limited number of products, limited miles you can go before a charge. And so even though there's this concerted pressure, and our guest tonight is going to talk to us a little bit about this, to go EV, the demand is down to about 4% of the population, maybe 2%. And so as much as there's a decline on diesel, there's not that much more on. So I think we're going a long ways before we see it as being a...
Well, not to mention they catch on fire and blow up. You got like 10 seconds to get out of the dang
thing. They've still got issues with the batteries.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, everybody's seen the videos of the hoverboards, you know, going sideways.
Oh, geez.
Imagine a bigger battery and it's
bigger
not
car.
Yeah.
Bigger hoverboard.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's just amazing. And so the bottom line is we are not going to see it in a massive point of view. They keep pointing out, 2030, 24, whatever. The fact is, I don't think we're going to see it anytime soon. And now that gas is really cheap and there's just a surplus of oil all over the world because no one's driving to work anymore, I don't think we're going to have a problem with gas-powered vehicles for anytime soon.
Yeah, well, you know who in there, it's going to be $10 a gallon.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, even so, but I think the people that watch this show are going to be okay with gas-powered vehicles.
Oh, yes.
Foreseeable future.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes. Well, that good news for university students who are into autonomous vehicles and race cars and all that. On October 23rd, 2021, the Indy Autonomous Challenge is being set up. And the university students will be competing for a $1.5 million prize.
Grant.
It's a prize for autonomous vehicles. Yeah. So my son did robotics in FIRST Robotics, and they had a certain part was autonomy, and then they ran them themselves. And then this last year they were supposed to be doing a Baja, which was to build a four-wheel drive vehicle with a kit, and compete. Well, with the COVID and all the restrictions, that's been bagged, unfortunately. He lost out like millions of other students lost out.
Yeah.
But maybe this year they'll open it up to students to be able to do it. But with all the restrictions with schools, good luck to see if there's going to even be anybody showing up, because right now everybody's still at home.
Everything's on a crawl space right now.
It really is. It's just pathetic.
We'll know more in about 2 weeks.
Yeah, we will. We will.
That's things are going to change in about 2 weeks, one way or the other.
One way or another. I agree.
One way or another.
Now,
there's still lots of really nice places to buy over here in Idaho.
Well, you were just...
just a thought.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. We really appreciate you guys being here. Coming up on the Windshield View this week, we've got industry insider Matthew DeBord. He's been with us before. He's coming up next on Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
Car
Cartoons Magazine is back. You know those crazy car comics from the past. They've returned in the all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of brand new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine full of one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available at your local comic book store, newsstand, and directly through Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com. That's cartoonsmag.com, where you can subscribe to a whole year's worth of fun. Cartoons Magazine, there's nothing else like it.
Hey, y'all, this is Tommy Ring with Ring Rods Hot Rod Shop in Nashville, Tennessee, and you're listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. Bunch of crazy dudes just like me. For all y'all crazy people out there, give us a listen. We appreciate it. Thank you.
I'm more resourceful than I thought.
My suit can still make an impression.
My video games are still game changers.
And my lamp can bring others a bright future.
Because when I donate my stuff to Goodwill,
it helps fund job placement and training for people right in my community.
Now my stuff gets a second chance.
And will give someone in my community
a second chance too.
Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. That's goodwill.org. This message brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
In 95, I helped tow your trailer. And in 09, it was sparks from me, your chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
My mind's out of gear, and my heart's in overdrive. I've everything to fear. I ain't never been more.
Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust is back with the first half of the Windshield View. And this week, welcome back, industry leader and insider, Matt DeBord. Welcome, Matt. I'm Ron.
It's great to be with you guys again. I've looked forward to this all year.
Oh, I like all that.
Year. All year. Far
out. How were you able to stand the pressure?
I don't know. I think I just clean living. Clean
That's
living.
What it must be, I'm sure. So you're in scenic New Jersey, huh?
I'm in beautiful Montclair, New Jersey.
Montclair,
yes.
New Jersey, Montclair. The garden spot of the Garden State.
It is the Garden State. I actually quite like it here. And I mean, yeah. I spent 10 years living in Los Angeles, so I have paradise of in the minds of some to compare it with. And
it's just, I see. Okay. Well, yeah. In the minds of some, my son lived in Los Angeles for about 10 years, and you know, as you know, there's goods and bads.
Oh yes. I mean, I was trapped for hours on one of the bads, which is called the Sepulveda Pass, going through from the valley down to Santa Monica on 5.
I was stuck at the truck stop in L.A. for like a day and a half waiting for a comp check to get the heck out of there.
Well, and you'll appreciate this if you live there. About the second or third week that my son moved there, he said, "Hey, everybody says there's a lot of date groves out by Riverside, and I think we just go out there and get a date milkshake. It's what, a couple hours, you know, back." He thought it was going to be a quick trip to Riverside.
Oh yeah, no.
There's no quick trip. No. There's no quick trip.
Nope.
Nowhere.
Like that shit was like water by the time he got it back.
Yeah.
So what's new in your end of the universe?
Oh gosh, well, you know, we've had a pretty. I mean, we probably had one of the strangest years in the history of the auto industry, I have to say.
Yep.
And I've been covering it, you know, at Business Insider, where, you know, I work, since the very beginning. I mean, the year started off, everyone thought we were going to have a pretty rocking and rolling year, you know. I mean, there was no indication that people were going to stop buying cars. There was a lot of cool new stuff that was coming out. We saw a lot of really, you know, quite interesting cars still launched during the course of the year, in spite of the pandemic. I mean, all the car shows got canceled.
Oh, I know.
Yes, damn it. Yeah,
but at the beginning of the year, everybody thought in Detroit and around the world that it was going to be probably a pretty good year, maybe not as great as some of the record years that we'd seen since 2014, but not bad. And then, kapow, you know, everything just kind of went crazy.
Yeah, the holes were punched for some pretty interesting stuff. I mean, you know, the Bronco and stuff like that, people were saying, well, this is going to be good. And, you know, Tesla was making moves and all, you know, it looked like that. And then, as you say, into the deck for 7 months.
I mean, it never happened before.
No.
It has never happened before. You know, even in World War II, the auto industry was still capable of making cars. They didn't make cars. They made planes and tanks sure. and stuff like that, but they could have still made cars. They had never shut the whole thing down.
No, ever. No.
Not really. I mean, you know, 1918, they weren't really, I mean, they were making cars in 1918, but they didn't shut the industry down then during the Spanish flu pandemic.
Nope. Yeah.
This was unprecedented.
Yeah,
it and is. So
I've been building my car, and then Brady's been working on his truck, even though the industry has it, but we're still working on our projects.
I've been collecting license plates. I got, you know.
See those.
So I got one for you. Given all the goofiness that's happened in the industry and all of the sort of aborted plans, do you happen to know of any model releases or cars that were slated like this is going to be the thing that they just scrapped completely until next year?
That's a great question. Because
there must have been some, I would think. You know, looking at projections for, you know, potential sales, not necessarily a new model, but upgrades, something like that. I know they had to have had a couple that they just pulled back the reins.
It's a good question.
It was a Ford Bronco, right? Ford Bronco, well, they pulled that back, right?
Yeah.
Well, Bronco's interesting because they did launch Bronco.
Yeah.
And I actually have driven the Sport, which is the you know, the baby Bronco, which is the Mexico made truck. The other two, the two-door and the four-door, you know, proper off-road Broncos, the ones that are supposed to really, you know, sort of move the needle for Ford on that front and give Jeep something to think about. And I guess, you know, probably Range Rover and folks like that as well, and Jaguar Land Rover. Those are just sort of delayed, and there's so much demand for them.
Yeah.
I think Ford, the last time I checked, I think Ford had something just south of 200,000 pre-orders.
Wow.
Two-door and Bronco four-door. So
well, they were making a big deal about, you know, put your $500 down and, you know, all of that. But, you know, that and a quarter will get you a cup of coffee these days because there's no production happening.
Yeah, yeah. I think they expected a lot of demand. I don't think they expected quite as much. And I think they knew they could get the Bronco Sport into the market.
Right.
I think people are just going to have to be not because of the pandemic necessarily, because Ford knows what they're doing. I mean, they're capable of, like, firing up the machinery once they want to get building.
Yep.
And, you know, the industry did reopen.
Yes, they did.
May and June.
Yep.
And thus far, I will give the industry some props here. It's been extremely safe. You haven't heard a whole lot about, you know, COVID-19 outbreaks at assembly plants or parts plants that are supporting either Detroit Big Three up in the upper Midwest, or the transplants down south, or plants in Texas and places like that. So the industry's done a pretty good job of getting itself rolling again. I mean, so much so that, you know, that we're starting to see the sales figures come out for the tail end of 2020 now.
Yep.
And I think, you know, the one I saw today that jumped out at me was GM, and they were down about 11%. Now you think, 11%. If you told them they were going to be down 11% back in March and April, when they had seen sales fall, you know, not 50%, but 30%,
40%,
right. They would have said, we'll take it.
Yes. Sure. Yep.
We'll take it. You know, I don't know. Well, that's a great question you asked earlier, though. I don't know that there was anything that got, I mean, there's stuff that got pushed off as far as production and time to market.
Yeah.
But I think they pretty well launched everything that they had planned on launching. They just did it online instead of it.
The virtual launch. This is definitely the year of the virtual launch. I mean, because nobody was, you know, rolling them on turntables at the car shows.
Yeah.
So they pretty much had to do that.
Well,
and if anything, the minor distraction of the, you know, the Takata debacle took people's minds off of what cars were coming out and what cars weren't. And that's been, you know, brewing for the last 4 or 5 years.
Yep.
So,
well, my thinking is this: is that with the virtual rollout, it's and we're going to talk about this on the other side, but it's been a game changer, because here we are, we're doing a Zoom now. It works because all the guys on our show are all living in different locations, anyways, and so it really has made sense. But now with businesses saying, "Hey, we love this idea. Everybody's at home; they're working. We don't have to pay for office space," and now events, and this has been a move for, we've seen it in the last 3 years, a reduction in overall attendance by automakers anyways at some of these big auto events, because, you know, hey, we can do our own release. We can do a virtual, and it's been moving this way, and this, I think, is kind of like pushed it over the edge. And I don't see the big events returning anytime in that large scale. I mean, that's just my thinking. These guys are saving too much money.
What do you guys think about that? Because they're, you know, a lot of people do like to go to car shows. On the other hand, there's been some skepticism about whether they're worth it anymore for the car makers to, you know, the dealers like it. The dealers like it when the car makers show up and show the stuff. But what do you guys think? Because a whole big discussion about this did break out in the industry over the course of the year because they had to cancel so much stuff and do all these virtual launches. Yeah. Do you think it's worth it to go to car shows anymore?
Well, we go to the automotive, the collector stuff and the hot rod and the rat rod, and that's where everybody wants to be. Okay. Yeah. But that's an enthusiast. As far as new cars,
I got to say, we went to the, you know, the new car release, you know, the International Auto Show every year for decades. And there is something about, you can look at this car online, you can do the 360 videos, you can do all of that and the virtual test drives and all that kind of stuff. But there really is something visceral about going up and sitting in the car and talking to the salesman and feeling the leather and smelling. I mean, all of that is very, very, it's a big part of, would I buy? Could I buy? Maybe I'll buy. I mean, that's, you know, it's a hands-on kind of a thing.
But you can do that at a dealership.
You can, but you can't see all the marks at a dealership. You can only see what they've got. So you know, is it worth it, well, you know, to put the 40 footers together with all the cars
the car
out there or not? I just, like you say, Matt, the car salesman will tell you, bring them.
It's at the car show. The cars that are at the car show, don't they have every extra that you can possibly get?
They're all
the car.
Sure.
But if you go to the dealership, they're not going to have all the bells and whistles that you might see at the car show. You get to see all and every one of the car makers, their car.
Well, hang on. We're going to be right back with more of our show.
What's going on with the other one?
Well, you know, it's funny because the dealers are always telling you to.
You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You just might love the Rad Bastards. We're a family-oriented, nonprofit organization. We believe in 1969 and older, in the rough is enough. Real steel and iron, old-school, traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other build, and cruise like crazy, because that's what car clubs are supposed to do. The Rad Bastards are a new class of old-school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Join us at cruise-ins all over the Puget Sound and on the Rad Bastards Car Club page on Facebook.
Don't move. We'll bring this rig home right after this.
Sensory sensitivity, repetitious behavior, lack of eye contact. You can see signs of autism in children as young as 18 months. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org/signs.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing, but not every child gets to be carefree. 1 in 6 kids in the U.S. are hungry. This breaks my heart, and it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and gives it to families in need. To help, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter. A lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
That's just one adoption story that started at a shelter. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Nurse, set up an IV. And you, her boyfriend, you were the driver?
Yes, doctor, but I didn't mean to hurt her. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Just buzzed? Oh, then your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie, I feel great.
She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad.
Back in Vehicle City. Yes, we are. We're back with the second half of the Windshield View on Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. And our conversation with Matt DeBord continues. And we were just talking about the virtual car shows. And I just want to point out that within the motorcycling realm, I used to go to the International Motorcycle Show. And then they had a number of other ones, and they all just shrunk. This last year, supposedly, they were putting some on and doing live events. But I'm thinking because you can do a 360 virtual tour of a car now with all the software and the integration, that people are going to be looking at that. And then there's YouTube, where everybody releases all their video on YouTube and the other formats. And then, hey, if I want to, I just go down to my local dealership and I go sit in it. It's not as nice as it used to be, because now with the COVID restrictions, the mask wearing and all that garbage, and people may not be as, you know, I don't know. I know China, by the way, China just what had their big show a couple months ago. I mean, yeah. They no masks, no nothing. And so
look, they sent the virus over here. Why do they?
Yeah.
I'm well, sorry. Yeah. That,
but I mean, they were able to do it. And so it seemed like that was a pretty big show.
Yeah.
What do you think,
the interesting
Matt?
Thing, though, about the car shows is the dealers, I'm not talking about the U.S. context for the car shows,
okay.
Not necessarily the European shows, but I think it's pretty much the same deal, is the dealers like them because the people come in there, and it's like a giant right. ad for going and buying a car. So the dealers in the area, in the region, think that if you go to Los Angeles, for example, they love the LA Auto Show. So usually very well attended. And people come in there and they see cars and bring their kids, and you know, it gets the idea in their head that they should go to the dealership and check out what's on the floor. So to Ron's point, you know, you're not always going to see what's on the show floor on, you know, the dealer's floor.
You're right.
Really different, but nonetheless, it gets the idea in your mind yeah. you want to buy a car. But you know, Ron, you made a comment earlier, I think Brady, you did as well, that you still worked on your cars. You know, you
yep.
still. It wasn't like car culture went away.
I mean, not at all.
On a little rally, I got to drive this vintage Alfa Romeo up to upstate New York. It was really actually probably the coolest car I drove all year, to be quite honest with you. And I drove a lot of cars this year. Just because the pandemic was going on doesn't mean that I didn't get press vehicles. The industry did a nice. Great job of keeping us. I mean, it was almost too many.
Oh yeah,
so many vehicles that they were going to launch in Europe that they couldn't launch.
Sucks to be you.
Yeah,
they sent them here. I had like, it was crazy. I had two Porsche 911s in a row at one point. You know, it was just nuts. But I found that car culture still held up. You know, once people figured out how to be able to do things safely,
yeah,
people still worked on cars. People still rallied with their vehicles. Sure. People still got together. You
and
know,
there were a lot of cruises and stuff and gatherings.
Cruises took
it
over.
Happened mostly. Well, I don't say mostly, but a lot of out of frustration. Like, well, we can't have a cruise. We can't have a car show, but we could still get together and drive. And a lot of people did.
Yep.
We did. We did a creepy cruise up to right. Up north there.
Yeah, we had our own cruise at the on Halloween Day, about a half dozen to dozen cars joined us, and we had a nice day gathering and had a nice top, you know, a couple few stops along the way. And there was some bigger ones here up in our neck of the woods where hundreds and hundreds of cars got together.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the Lake Stevens one, yeah.
Yeah. And so what we have seen is the old days in the 80s, that's when all the cruising got kind of cut off, the local governments, no, you can't do that. Well, now that's all picked up, and they're all happy to have them out there driving because people stop, still go to the drive-ins, go to whatever, get their food. And so the municipalities have not done anything. They're actually like, thumbs up, go ahead and cruise. We don't care.
Drive-ins came back a little bit, too. You
yes, know, they are.
I did, a few things I did in the 80s was cruise around in cars and go to drive-ins.
Yes.
Drive-in theaters. Drive-in theaters around here are opening up, and you can go to the drive-in theaters now.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's your original social distancing.
Yes, sir.
No, exactly. It's true.
Yeah. That's...
Well, this is another thing that the industry found out was that they back in the at the beginning of the year when they thought it was going to be a catastrophe, they were completely terrified that they were not going to be able to sell any cars to anybody.
Right.
And the a lot of innovation on the dealership side happened. Dealers really put in a lot of really necessary safety stuff to reassure the public that it was safe to come to the dealership. But they also started doing touchless deliveries and all kinds of, they really ramped up their online approach to selling cars. So we wound up with, not a bad year. I mean, it's not been added up yet. That'll happen this week. We'll find out how many cars were sold, but it's just a little bit south of 17 million.
Wow.
Passenger vehicles and trucks and SUVs in the U.S., which is that's
a
lot of cars.
Yeah.
So a lot of them on the road.
Of touchless delivery, that actually brings something to my mind. You know, there's companies like Carvana, which they'll basically you pick a car online, they deliver it to you, you never touch. Have you seen or are you aware of any figures where companies like that, they must have had some growth over the last year just because of the situation?
I talked to Carvana as well as some of these other folks who were active in that space because they're internet startups, they're not your traditional franchise car dealership model. And they were you know, optimistic about how things are going to work out for them this year. They also, I think, maybe got a little bit overconfident in the sense that not in a really bad way, but they started to think maybe the whole market was going to get remade,
right,
you know, along the lines of the way they were doing business. And it actually turned out it didn't shake down that way. What it did do is move the needle slightly in the direction of people out there who want to buy a car, possibly making more demands of dealerships about how they want to test drive the car, how they want to take delivery of the car, and really in particular, how they want to do the onerous F&I process. I bought a lot of cars, right? And I go into the dealership and I always tell the person I talk to, look, I'm not going to try to, you know, haggle you down to some crazy price or anything like that. We'll come to terms here. We'll talk about the loan. Everything will be fine. But I probably am not going to have time to sit around for the 2 or 3 hours it's going to take your F&I guy to run me through all the paperwork.
And so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you the corner office.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm going to give you some money for the car and I'm going to come back tomorrow and we're going to do this deal tomorrow, next day, something like that. But don't worry about it. I'll come back and we'll get the deal done. You don't have to panic. I'm still going to buy the car.
I'll find something. You'll give me the keys.
Yeah. So I've done this a bunch of times, you know, and my feeling is that this is, you know, me, because I bought like 15, 16 cars in my life. The average person, you know, just gets completely, you know, mortified by this process and just, it's just unpleasant for them. And what happened because of the way that a lot of these folks innovated around how cars are going to be, you know, sold, was that they moved the needle a little bit more in the direction of the consumer being able to call the shots on that front.
Right.
And the dealership saying, all right, well, you know, we're just going to have to do this remotely and then drop the car off and they'll have all the paperwork there. And of course, this prevents them from being able to do a lot of upselling.
It's
not necessarily something they want to do. But the alternative is, this person doesn't buy a car from me and maybe never buys a car from me again, or even thinks about me. And, you know, I got to meet their needs, you know? So that was something that actually changed, not a huge amount during the year, but a little bit. So I think we're probably going to see some progress on that over the next couple of years.
Well, and I also was reading on the dealer front in some of the industry magazines that basically a lot of them have a skeleton crew now. So the sales, instead of a sales staff of 20, they're down to 5, and they do most of their sales online. And if you think about it, my sons and the generation, let's just say 40 and below, they're just already adapted to buying online. So they might see it, they place an order, then they come into the dealership and they take a look at it, or vice versa, they bring it to their house, they do a test drive. But they're already used to buying everything, all their electronics, all their gadgets, everything from clothing already online.
One click.
Yes.
Yep.
So I
click once and everything's already baked into the e-commerce platform and it shows up a couple of days later, and then they have to buy a car and they think, why is this so daggone challenging?
Can I just do Zelle or PayPal or something?
So another thing that we were looking at, and we talk about this a lot, and I think we talked last time you had on, but there's all this, I call them globalists, push to get everybody in electric battery cars, et cetera. And we just did a report, just came out, that the predictions are that maybe 4% in the next few years might be a reasonable idea of what percentage of cars that are going to be sold in America are going to be EV. And yet there's these huge mandates by California, European nations, et cetera, of no, and in China, of going all EV, when in reality, we have a surplus of oil. We have no one really wants to buy these things for many, many reasons. What is your take on that? Why is there such a pressure to go that route when the population doesn't want to go, and it's just not even feasible yet because of the length of time you have to be in a car to get a charge before you go to the next step? Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, not only that, but these vehicles are expensive.
Very expensive.
So it's quite challenging for a consumer to be able to get a reasonable car loan on an EV these days, or, you know, like the kind of leasing terms that they get on a, you know, perfectly fuel efficient and easy to live with gas car. I have a pretty solid take on this at this point. So my view is that a lot of people in the industry are saying we're probably going to see something like 25-30% of the market be electric. That's globally by 2030.
I hear that.
It is going to be driven by the fact that the diesel situation is the bottom has just fallen out of diesel in Europe. So they're going to replace diesel with something else, and they're going to replace it with electric. And in China, you have a market that's north of 20 million annually now in terms of, you know, the light vehicle and truck sales. That's probably going to go to like 35 or 40, you know, over the next decade. And much of that growth, the government has decided is going to be electric. So there's a huge amount of government support behind that. So what that leaves is the U.S. as the, and North America really is the most competitive market that there is right now, but it's completely dominated by pickups and SUVs. Right.
Diesel
and
trucks.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Diesel trucks.
Totally, yeah. So
they're not going away. Yeah.
No, the diesels are not going to go away. I just think that what we're going to wind up with is a U.S. North America kind of framework where it's still mostly gas powered. Yeah. You have a kind of hybrid in Europe and a lot of small cars, a lot of small electric vehicles, which would be completely unpopular here. I mean, they're not going to be able to take small electric vehicles from Europe, which would be, you know, urban vehicles largely, and put them here. They won't have the range. They won't be people. It's just not going to work.
Arizona.
And then in China, there's going to be a huge amount of growth on electrification. So you'll start to see all the OEMs who want to sell electric vehicles, you know, make them for the China market.
Well, but also in China, I mean, most of the cars are in the urban areas, and that's like an eighth, maybe a tenth of the entire country. Out in the sticks, I don't know how they're going to do EVs because there's no support for them. There's no system.
Are they going to charge it? Are they going to charge the damn thing?
Well, that's the thing. I probably told y'all last time I had this sort of gentleman's bet with a former colleague of mine, still colleague, but he works for Mercedes now. He's not a journalist, about how the F-150 is going to be a big deal in China at some point.
Yeah.
And his argument is that, oh, no, the Chinese are never going to buy pickup trucks. And I
put a Tesla motor in it.
No. They are going to buy pickup trucks. Everybody wants pickup trucks. Trust me. Everybody wants pickup trucks. So I actually do think that the big launch, the thing that's really going to move the needle on EVs in the North American market is going to be when these pickup trucks start to hit.
Maybe so.
Well, that's because the value.
But it's the style of vehicle, not so much the power chain.
Well, you know what it is? I was talking to Ford about this the other day, and here's the insight I got from Ford, which is that they think they're more so than the suburban person who needs a vehicle. They're not going to necessarily be a huge EV customer.
Right.
They think that the contractor, the working market, is going to be really see, and particularly folks who have to buy multiple trucks are going to see the value of these things because they got basically a rolling generator there. Okay. So you've got something you can power a whole job site off of, and you can do it indoors if you have to. So you're not stuck outside. You know, if you've got an indoor construction situation and you can't run a generator in there, you could roll that truck in and do work in there. And they think this is going to be of high value to them. And I also think they're going to be able to move the needle pretty significantly on the commercial side to sell EV vans into fleet operators. And the fleet operators are probably like that because they can centrally charge them. So that gets to, Ron, your point, that gets to their whole, you know, problem with charging. You know, they don't have to worry about charging them, you know, in a consumer sense, because they'll be able to have a central charging location and just
like a UPS.
So these things are
something
replacing the Sprinter market, that kind of thing.
Exactly. You know, Ford's very excited about their e-Transit, which is their Sprinter competitor, you know? So that's my take on the EV market, but it's right now it's 2%. And optimistically, it grows to like 20-30%. But one would want to be somewhat skeptical about that. Yeah, well, I mean, 10 years ago, I was talking to people who said it was going to be 10-15%, maybe 20% by now.
Yeah, I don't see it.
It just hasn't manifested.
I just don't see it because logistic-wise, I know they're getting money somehow to pour into this, but my personal view, we hear the magic numbers, but like you said, 10 years ago, you were thinking it was going to be this way. And the fact is, it's going to be certain segments. China's going to drive a lot of that, but there's going to be all of South America. They're not going to do it. I don't see, like you said, the whole North American, South American continent is just in Africa. I just don't see any of that. But yeah, definitely China, where they've got the infrastructure, it makes
Toyota
total sense.
Africa. That's
yeah, Toyota.
That
yeah. Well, but, yeah, I mean, the Africa market's still...
It's nothing to worry about.
There's a lot of potential for growth there, but I think if you're going to put your money anywhere as a big OEM, big car maker, you're going to go look
China.
At China. Everybody wants to. Everybody knows the growth is going to be in China, and that's where they want to go.
Yeah. So another thing that I was interested in is that with the reduction of diesels and stuff. But what are some of the other things that you've seen within the industry that has that maybe it that you said when this first close down came you're thinking that this was going to all take and then all of a sudden it started bubbling up to the top and things have been moving. We know from our side that all the custom and the fab shops, they're busier than ever. They're looking for employees because people got their money and they're like, I'm going to go and put my money into that hobby car I've been putting off for all these years.
They have time
and they've got time. So from our side, we've seen it just blowing up. And So
I mean, I have to say, I think that this is, I mean, it's.
Oh, you know what? We are down to like 5 seconds.
It's Matt, a huge national tragedy, but it's in a lot of ways, it's the greatest year the car business ever had.
Thanks, Matt, for coming on with us. This is Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, and we got a great story coming up with next on Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
Thank you, guys.
Today we decided to walk to school. The light counted. 15, 14,
41, 31, I mean 13.
We took a left on Carroll Street. Danny's smart, but he gets distracted. I realized he forgot his homework. I hope he doesn't have another bad day at school.
When you can see learning and attention issues from their side, you can be on their side. That's why there's Understood.org, a free resource for the parents of the 1 in 5 kids with learning and attention issues. Go from misunderstanding to Understood.org.
Hi, this is Big Daddy Don Garlitson. Welcome to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
Cartoons Magazine is back. You know those crazy car comics from the past. They've returned in the all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of brand new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine full of one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available at your local comic book store, newsstand, and directly through Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com. That's cartoonsmag.com, where you can subscribe to a whole year's worth of fun. Cartoons Magazine, there's nothing else like it.
Okay, forest animals, kids are coming to the forest, and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow, have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course.
Catchy. I like it. River, how's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man.
I love it. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. Okay, squirrel.
The forest has been preparing just for you. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org.
I want to thank my mommy for loving me so much.
For taking me to the doctor when I broke my foot.
For leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom. For taking you to your therapies. For understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. That's why AARP gives you the information to provide even better care for your loved one. Visit aarp.org/caregiver.
It's time for Car Confidential, another great story with Fender's friends and friends. Let her rip there, Brady.
Oh, that's tater chip to you, buddy.
Tater chip?
Not a tater chip. We are, in fact, doing yet another from Fender's Fins and Friends. We love Lance's books because they're kind of fun. You can get them on Amazon, of course, if you find that your bookshelf needs an empty space to fill. And Fender's Fins and Friends is one, and Grins, Gears, and Gasoline is the other one. But he's got a couple more out now that have nothing to do with cars. I'm not sure. You know, Lance, let me just speak to you for a second. Would you please write a book about your radio ranch? You should. He's collecting radios.
Yeah.
He's got a whole garage now full of radios, antique radios. He should put a book together, a picture book of just, well, all right.
So radio, this one, radio, sound salvation.
This one is called Diamonds in the Dealership. And it kind of goes to where Lance is headed these days. The collector car hobby is not just about old cars. Within the hobby are people who love old signs as much as old cars. At one time, all the old cars were new cars sitting in or ordered from a new car dealership. The dealership was surrounded by signs identifying the manufacturer and also signs boasting about the incredible attributes of some of the cars. Some featured jetaway and torque flight transmissions and jet fire rocket and blue flame motors and Vista Cruiser and Hornet styling. The late 1940s through the 1960s were the best years for bombastic verbiage and hyperbole. Extra points if you can spell either one of those.
Bombastic.
Bombastic?
Yes.
Bombastic verbiage and hyperbole. To many car collectors, the signs and the showroom displays from that era are just as exciting as the cars. And I kind of got to agree. They're really cool stuff to have in your garage. There's some of them behind me. Well, not so many. License plates, anyway. Service station signs are also highly sought after by collectors. A large Texaco or a Shell sign always makes a car lover's garage or family room more festive. Signs proclaiming the virtue of no knocks or Fire Chief Gasoline bring a smile. Lance's garage, by the way, is filled with this stuff. If you've seen pictures of it, it's all in there. Now, this hasn't always been the case, of course. For years, these things were, the signs and the accessories were displayed and then abandoned when the new model year's promotional arrives, you know, items arrived and the next ad campaign began. The preceding models and model year's items or gas additive proclamations instantly became junk, and soon they were added to the local landfill where Lance would go and find them.
No. Oh, yes.
Anyway. Fortunately, many items were banished to the dealer's storeroom or attic, and as time went by, these items became desirable to car buffs, and some lucky old car aficionados were able to get their hands on them. Most of the time, dealers thought the signs and displays were just junk, taking up space, so they were glad to get rid of them. You want that piece of junk? Heck, you can have it. Get it out of here. The happy recipient was thrilled to have a flashy sign to hang in the bedroom or the garage. What's more attractive than a huge, wouldn't you really rather have a Buick sign?
Or a red Pegasus neon.
See the USA in a Chevrolet. Hanging on a collector's wall, that would be the thing. If a sign included neon, well, then you had the most desirable sign of all. I began collecting signs in the 60s. Two signs in the collection were actually retrieved from dumpsters.
Oh, wow. Finally,
times changed, and the dealers realized that they had things that people actually were willing to purchase.
Mm-hmm.
So, what was free began selling for 10 or 20 bucks, and a few decades later, these same signs were selling for 200 to 20,000 each. Yep, there were four zeros in that last number, and I'll warn you, that should sit down, and you could kind of take just a moment before you read an article like this, because a friend of mine just paid, well, hold on. Most of us couldn't afford to buy. Today, the signs we obtained in the past, the $20 purchase made in 1985 might now be worth $2,000. Could be. But most of us don't care about the monetary value. It's how fantastic they look hanging in the garage, not necessarily how much they're worth. Now, for the past 20 years, when Lance was hosting television's vintage vehicle show, plug, it took him to a lot of places. He's been fortunate to see a lot of collections of really incredible signs.
I've seen some of those shows.
Oh, yeah. And a few of these collections are owned by some of the most famous icons and celebrities in the automotive and entertainment business. Most of them are owned by the average guy who spent his or her hard-earned dollars to occasionally purchase just an additional sign to hang in the garage. There's still good deals available for the dedicated collector who's willing to search really hard for a bargain. Recently, I purchased a large 1920s sign advertising automotive electrical parts. It felt like 1975 again when I handed over a whopping $18.
Wow.
For the sign.
Yeah.
At the other end of the spectrum is a sign recently purchased by a friend of mine. He began collecting signs 12 years ago and now has perhaps the best collection in the world. He recently paid $44,000 for a sign advertising a brand of oil from the 40s.
Oh my gosh.
It's a 2x3 foot piece of metal. It's more valuable than a lot of the items displayed in a jewelry store. I warned you to be sitting down before you finish this article. And I have to tell you, just yesterday, I was cruising through Facebook and I found an outfit that sells those neon Brady's Garage, you know, signs you could have. We could put them up in your house, several different sizes. And I'm kind of a sucker for that sort of stuff, so I bought one. It's news to my wife. She's just hearing this as we speak.
Uh-huh. There's a pillow.
It was only
gonna...
$197. What?
Only.
But it's really going to look cool.
I know. All right.
But... But you know, these things, they really are out there. They're available, and it's kind of fun. I've got a bunch of signs in my garage, license plates and other stuff, but also signs for various, you know, brands of things, Harley Davidsons and Chevys. I've got a GMC sign, and I know Ron has a lot of stuff in his garage that's, you know,
Olympia neon sign. Yeah. Olympia Brewing Company. Yeah. The
only thing I got is our little horsepower Chrome and Rust.
Horsepower Chrome and Rust barn find dust sign, which, by the way, coming up, we got a winner in the trivia contest.
Oh, good.
Right on.
Yeah, over the holiday. It was very exciting. But you know what? Again, I got to say nice words about Lance, because his books are really cool, can get them on Amazon. And coming up a little later this year in 2021, we're going to celebrate the return of David Dickinson's old Car Nut book series.
Sweet.
So stay with us and enjoy.
Well, you know, you were talking about these signs. I remember my friend, and we were down, and this is in Ferndale. I was probably freshman in high school, and we were down at his house, and he was in this, like, four-story, one of the grand mansions of Ferndale. Right. And they lived there, and in his room, there was a crawl space. So we went up above, and we were starting to build, like, a little fort up there because it was all open. Well, there was a sign up there. It was an old drugstore sign, and it was huge. I mean, we're like 3 by 6, and it was like, oh, this will work great for the flooring, you know. So you didn't, but somebody had shoved that up there just enough that they could get it up there. And that's where you find the stuff in barns. And there was another place that was right on a gravel road that was down from another friend's, and we would sneak into this barn, and they had all that kind of stuff, all the pop bottles, farm implements, stuff from stores and everything, and we got chased out of there, so we couldn't go in there. Yeah. But and I'm thinking somebody who had a treasure trove of all these old things, and we're talking in the 70s, you know, early 70s, this is when we were crawling around in there. But, you know, we have this place that's right up the street from us. It's Keeler's Corner. It's in a historic spot. The owner has to keep it the way it is. The place is getting run down further and further, but it's got a bunch of the Pegasus stuff and all that. Personally, I will not pay any money for that kind of thing. If I find it for free, great. I've just got a bunch of old hot rod centerfolds in my garage that I've got on there that are really cool stuff from Hot Rod Magazine, and and then I'll have that in my garage. And but you guys have been collecting things, and a lot of people do.
I think it's one of the things that car people do. You see something that you like, and it's like, that'd be cool hanging on the wall.
I got movie posters. That's what I got.
Yeah, sure.
I got some of those.
I got about 10 more I need to get on the wall. So maybe some of those will go in my garage.
Lots of albums.
Yep, me too. Albums.
I used to have movie posters because for a while I did movie reviews on the radio, which is a great gig. And we used to get all kinds of movie posters, and, you know, that's where those things lived.
Well, that is great. And we had a great guest, and so kind of tied in there. So,
yeah. Hey, the Nathan Lipinski Weekly Trivia Question is coming up next, so stick around. We're going to do that right after this.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go, Fish Dad!
Oh, come on! This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil.
It only takes a moment to make a moment.
Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Stick around. We'll be back after these words.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes. And you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to, are you? Kids, work, listening to the radio. You're busy, which is great because busy people can't get prediabetes. Oh my, I read that wrong. They can. Should have worn my glasses. So visit doihaveprediabetes.org and take a short test, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Looking for a job worth talking about? Teaching is creative, collaborative, and intellectually challenging. See why teachers have better work stories at teachdfw.org and learn more about becoming a teacher. Brought to you by Teach and the Ad Council.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car-crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
I'm jumping in with my clothes on!
Most party fouls are pretty dumb, but if you decide to drink and drive underage, you could lose your license and your freedom. Learn more at ultimatepartyfoul.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Help us if you can. You're an El Camino. El Camino man. Only you can.
It's the El Camino man. That's him over there, Steve. He's the guy.
I know he is.
Or later, Steve. We're going to help him build this car. We are.
Yes, we are.
Yep.
We are. Hey, this is Around the Wheel. This is where we usually talk about upcoming events and stuff. And I promise you right now, this year, 2021, is going to be a year with automotive events for us to talk about. We are going to do that. As a matter of fact, there was one that happened last weekend, which we didn't get a chance to talk about because it was our end of the year show. Our friend Thomas Owens, who's been on the show several times, he's the founder and leader of Pacific Northwest Custom Coupes and Sedans, the Facebook group. It's got thousands of members. They did a really, really cool charitable event over the last weekend. If you go to their Facebook webpage, you can see the event. A young lad with cancer was looking for some things for Christmas, and they generated a whole bunch of stuff. They got toys. They got a dirt bike. They got all kinds of things.
Oh, wow.
Great
cool.
story. Seriously, go and take a look at that. We'll put a link to it on our page.
Excellent. Excellent.
Last time we did a trivia question, the question was, in 1911, what Swiss engineer built his very first car in America with financing from the Durant Company? It's kind of a complex question, and I didn't think anybody was going to get it, to be honest with you. I threw it out there. But you know what? We got a guy from Wyandotte, Minnesota.
Wyandotte.
Wyandotte, Minnesota. Daryl Hudson. He sent me an email, said, I got this, and he did. So the answer, the Swiss engineer who did it, wait, was... Where'd I put it? It's here.
I'm on pins and needles.
Yeah. It was the guy who started, wait. He started, William Durant. He was a self-made millionaire before he ever joined the auto business.
Oh, wow.
He bought Oldsmobile, Pontiac, Cadillac, formed General Motors. He almost bought Ford, but he didn't have enough money. But Durant always kept himself kind of stretched thin. He got money to do this in order to get everything started. And then he lost it all in the stock market. And in the Depression, he was penniless.
Wow.
But William A. Durant was the guy's name. And for some reason or another, Daryl Hudson knew that. So congratulations, buddy.
Wow. You
put your certificate up with the
congratulations, Daryl.
Horsepower. Barn Chrome fine dust. That's right. And this week's question. Here we go. Steve's
here we
home,
go.
Even as
I
you
can't
speak.
Wait.
This week's question. Lee Iacocca, big name in both Ford and Chrysler. Everybody knows Lee Iacocca was basically responsible for the Mustang. That was kind of his baby, and it got out there and did the thing. But he was also responsible for what other really iconic car?
Ooh.
If you know Lee Iacocca now, not Carroll Shelby, because this has been the movie's been on, Ford versus Ferrari.
Right.
But Lee Iacocca was responsible for what other iconic car? If you know, send us an email or contact us at horsepowerchromeandrust.com. You can go to the Facebook page and put a messenger thing in. You can do whatever you think you need to do. Let us know. You too could get a winner certificate on our Facebook page, which will also be plastered all over every other place that we see our lovely icon. For heaven's sake, we're on how many places are we on now, Steve? Do you have a list?
Probably about
up to about 20 now.
If you go to YouTube, you'll see that we're listed on probably 15 or more podcast outlets.
Huge, people.
And
huge.
Then
and we thank you, by the way, for that. Yep. For liking and following
very much.
Subscribing to our stuff is really cool. We had a really, really good time with Matt DeBoard today.
Great guy.
Nice guy.
He's just a super guy, and it's cool to have somebody who's that connected to the inside of the industry, because this year is going to be a very strange year
upside down
for the automotive industry. But we're pretty optimistic that things are going to come back, because they can't go anywhere further down.
Well, and that's exactly right. We found out that actually the year ended better than they were thinking it would.
Yep.
A lot of things are still in the process. The pressure to stay and conform is still on us. But
I see a lot of new cars out there. Lots
but
of
the
new
fact
cars
is, people are buying houses, people are buying cars, people are still living. And I think, hey, if you're not commuting every day, an hour one way, an hour back, now you got some money in your pocket, and all of a sudden,
there's that.
Yep.
Or you could be like our friend Phil, who's now up to 900 project cars in his yard. I don't think he's got any room for his house anymore. Hey, listen, we reach over 1 million car enthusiasts every week. We thank you for coming, and this is going to be a terrific year here at Horsepower Chrome and Rust. Had a great time talking with Matt DeBoard. And listen, make sure that you are aware that it's your responsibility to keep your eyes on the road, your hands on the wheel, your foot to the floor. For Ron Foreman and Steve Johann, Brady Wright, Horsepower Chrome and Rust.